We welcome onto the show, once again, one of our favorites, Jordan Dajani from CBS Sports, at Jordan, D-A-J-A-N-I, on X, on Twitter. He covers the NFL. We've got a week in the books, Jordan, and we look forward now to week two, which starts tonight. Off of week one, was there anybody more impressive to you than the 49ers on Monday night?
What's going on, Kevin? Thanks for having me on the show. Yeah,
always
that was an incredible win. I mean, they say we don't even need Christian McCaffrey. We're going to take Jordan Mason and just run up and down the field on this vaunted Jets defense. I was on record believing that the Jets could have the best defense in the NFL this season, and I'm already feeling a little bit stupid with how the 49ers handled them. I mean, Aaron Rodgers providing a consistent presence at quarterback, something that New York has not had in several years. I thought the Jets were poised to really take off, but the 49ers proved to the NFL world why they are one of the best teams in the league, why they are favored to return to the Super Bowl, and they didn't even need Christian McCaffrey to do so.
Fields versus Wilson, is it over?
It should be. I mean, I've been very stable in myself saying that I really think that Justin Fields should have been the winner of the quarterback battle as it was. I don't have any faith in Russell Wilson. And I think when we're talking about a team that is down a couple starters on the offensive line with an offensive coordinator that wants to run the football, that Justin Fields should have been the easy choice all along. At this point in his career, Russell Wilson doesn't seem like someone who can see the field that well and step up in the pocket when there's pressure, escape the pocket, and throw the ball downfield. It doesn't seem like Russell Wilson is that player anymore, at least not what I saw during his time with the Denver Broncos. And you go back to the win against the Falcons, which was an upset in week one with Justin Fields. He, of course, added that element of being a weapon with his legs. He showed off clear, established chemistry with wide receiver one, George Pickens. And he was efficient, relatively. Looking at his numbers in terms of percentage from a passing standpoint, Justin Fields had one of his more efficient days as a thrower of the football. So I think those are good signs for the Steelers moving forward. And now you look forward to week two right here against the Denver Broncos, a very winnable game, albeit on the road. I think Justin Fields could lock up the quote-unquote competition with a good win against Denver in week two.
Had somebody on earlier, because Washington plays the Giants this week, talking about the Daniel Jones situation, but what do you think? I mean, this is a guy that might be number one on the list of mocked players after week one. Is it over if he doesn't come in here and beat Washington?
You know, it does feel over, and I feel like that's crazy to say as we enter week two, but week one against the Vikings, that was the most downtrodden Daniel Jones I think I've ever seen, so much so that the Vikings even said that they felt bad for the guy. I mean, since the start of last season, Daniel Jones has thrown more touchdowns to the wrong team than his own team. He's got three pick sixes and two passing touchdowns. He's 1-6 as the starter since signing his $160 million deal. And, I mean, on top of this, I kind of have concerns about the defensive side of the ball as well. I know that they went out there and got Brian Burns, but keep in mind that they have a new defensive coordinator with Shane Bowen compared to what they had with Wink Martindale. And what I noticed was that it was very apparent against Minnesota that there was a change at DC because the Giants blitzed Sam Darnold on 23.1% of his dropbacks. And that's a huge difference from what Wink Martindale was doing from an aggressive standpoint. So Sam Darnold was allowed to be incredibly efficient, look like a true QB1 against this Giants defense. So from Daniel Jones to the defense to the team at large, things are not looking so great for the rival Giants.
You know, that point's been made twice on the show about how Shane Bowen approach much different than Wink Martindale. You know, Washington had last year in Sam Howell essentially a rookie quarterback, and Wink Martindale made him look bad on two different occasions. I mean, they were underdogs here, 9-point underdogs, and came in with Tommy DeVito and won the game. So is it just that you think that's how he approached Minnesota with Darnold, with, you know, Jefferson and Addison and the weapons they have? By the way, they added the Green Bay running back from the year before, Aaron Jones, who had a big day. Do you think that that's what's in store for Jaden Daniels, or do you think he'll come after Daniels more?
You know, it's a good question. I think part of it has to do with game planning for any opponent week to week. But Shane Bowen was the DC with the Tennessee Titans. So yeah, you can go back there and look at how Mike Vrabel approached different opponents. And they love to get pressure with four if they can do that. And the way that the Giants operated this offseason, that's something that they want to accomplish and give their linebackers and those in those secondary nickels some more flexibility when it comes to sticking to their assignments. So, no, I do have a question about the Giants and how they want to apply pressure on Jaden Daniels. The thing is, I don't know how much confidence you guys have in your Commanders' offensive line, because my confidence was certainly shaken with their performance against Tampa Bay. The bottom line is that Jaden Daniels' legs are absolutely going to be a key to victory if Washington wants to get into the win column.
You know, you mentioned Mike Vrabel, and I think he's in Cleveland. I think that's where he ended up as like a, you know, some sort of consultant. I forget if he's on the staff. I'm looking it up right now. Maybe you know the answer to this. But I was going to ask you about Cleveland. Clearly, there is a quarterback there that they made a massive mistake with, because since the personal issues with him started, he's never been the same as a player or maybe even as a teammate. What are they going to do with the Deshaun Watson situation in Cleveland?
Yeah, you know, I didn't know he could look any worse. You know, I thought that this year maybe could be the time where he improved his play and at least approached the territory of looking like a shadow of himself when he was with the Houston Texans. And, of course, that didn't happen against the Dallas Cowboys on Sunday. He went 0-for-10 on passes with 15 air yards. That's the worst mark since air yards were first tracked in 2006. And, by the way, he still hasn't passed for 300 yards in a game as a Brown. And Sunday, you know, in the season opener, in front of your home fans, against the Cowboys, kind of felt like a new low. And now, of course, there's this new civil lawsuit that's been reported on this week. Right. And I think a lot of people are trying to speculate if the Cleveland Browns wanted to be very aggressive and get out of the contract. You know, is that something that we could start talking about? I don't know. I don't know what the Browns' level of confidence in him is, but of course it has to be shaken given just all that's transpired ever since the trade became official. So I will say that the developments from this civil lawsuit, because it appears that the plaintiff is going to attempt to go along with the NFL investigation. If the NFL decides to suspend Deshaun Watson, due to their findings of the investigation, and again, I don't know how likely that is, that's when we can start having conversations about maybe a void contract moving forward.
Yeah, and an opportunity to get out of it. Vrabel is a coaching and personnel consultant with the Cleveland Browns. I'm actually still surprised he did not get a job in the offseason. We're talking to Jordan DeJohnny from CBS Sports. Back to Monday night. How did you think Aaron Rodgers looked? I know they barely had the football in the game because they couldn't get San Francisco off the field, but how did you think he looked?
Some good plays, some bad plays. Of course, I'll go back to that free play of that great touchdown pass he had to Alan Lazard across the middle. I thought that his wide receiving corps struggled with a couple of drops during the course of action. But there's no doubt that Aaron Rodgers looks less mobile than he's ever looked before in his NFL career. And the offensive line did struggle against the San Francisco pass rush at times as well. So I feel like you have to remember that Aaron Rodgers is objectively the oldest player in the NFL, coming off of that torn Achilles. He hasn't played a real football game in over a year. And I think that there was definitely some rust with how he approached the game. But here's the bottom line. He's going to be an improvement at the quarterback position compared to what the Jets have had over the past few years. But I think the biggest shock to me was just how the defense fared against San Francisco. So it's interesting because the Jets now go to Tennessee to play the Titans in week two on a short week, another road game. And I feel like Denard Wilson, the new Titans defensive coordinator, Maryland Terrapins legend, by the way, he had an incredible showing in his first game. So I'm really intrigued to see that chess match between Aaron Rodgers and the Titans, they're currently ranked number one in the NFL defense.
Denard Wilson, not only a Terp, but also a DeMatha product from Hyattsville. So in keeping with the quarterback conversation, with quarterbacks that came back off injuries, what does Joe Burrow look like to you? Is this something that's lingering, or was it just the typical Cincinnati week one, a dog game, which they've played a couple of times under Burrow.
Yeah, I mean, Joe Burrow's now 1-8 in his career in weeks 1 through 2, so it's very fair to say that the Bengals really struggle to get off on the right foot when it comes to approaching the regular season. But I do think that there is some concern with maybe lingering issues. I mean, all the talk in the NFL this week has been about him picking up Gatorade bottles and him shaking off his wrist and things of that nature. He certainly didn't look like the confident Joe Cool in the pocket when facing the New England Patriots. And, of course, he cost us all our survivor pools in week one. So I'm really interested to see how he bounces back against, I mean, the best team in the league, the Kansas City Chiefs in Arrowhead Stadium. But it's just hard for me to envision that we're going to see Joe Burrow look so much better than he was in week one. I mean, 21 of 29, just 164 yards. There was absolutely some rust with Ja'Marr Chase, and then T. Higgins didn't play with the hamstring injury, and who knows if he suits up for week two.
When is Jordan Love back, and are there chances to, you know, at least contend in that division shot?
So I think the timetable that NFL media put out there was 3 to 6 weeks, and Jordan Love, I think his team's already put it out there that he's going to try to get back as soon as possible. So you look at the next three games on the Packers schedule, the Indianapolis Colts this week, which I think is a very tough matchup, even though it's in Green Bay. Then you face the Tennessee Titans, who don't appear to be a great team. Then you host the Minnesota Vikings the next week after that. So I don't think we can objectively say that the Packers' chances of winning the division are shot. If Malik Willis can get one win over the next three games and Jordan Love returns, then that would be a win, in my opinion, given how we were feeling after we saw that pop in Jordan Love's knee against the Philadelphia Eagles. So I don't think we can say they're shot just yet. I mean, it's absolutely a hit to this team. I think it's really interesting to watch how Malik Willis fares. I think that was one of the biggest surprises of NFL cutdown day, was that the Packers, they got rid of their two backup quarterbacks and sent a seventh-round pick to Tennessee for Malik Willis. This is a quarterback who's only started three games. He's won one of them. And in all three of those starts, he's never crossed 100 yards passing. So to say it was a gamble to go out there and trade for this guy to be your solidified number two is an understatement. So it'll be fascinating to see how he fares under Matt LaFleur's guidance.
Are they admitting in Atlanta that Kirk Cousins is not healthy?
I mean, do they have to? He certainly didn't look very spry in the pocket. How about I put it that way? Kirk Cousins looked like he certainly had some rust. And, man, I want to give some credit to the Steelers' defensive backs, though. Those guys were flying around the field. T.J. Watt had one of the best games I think I've ever seen him play. The Steelers' defense really controlled that matchup. But, yeah, I think there's clearly reasons for concern with Kirk Cousins. His debut in Atlanta in front of his home fans was an absolute dud. So it's just one of those things where, you know, week one can be a liar. Kirk Cousins has been statistically one of the best quarterbacks in the league during his time with the Vikings. So who do they play this week? They play the Philadelphia Eagles on Monday Night Football.
Yeah, and then
so
the Chiefs the next week. Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, there could be some. There's going to be some Penix talk if they don't get something done here. You tweeted something out, and I didn't see any of this game, but tell everybody essentially the historic day that Anthony Richardson had for the Colts.
Yeah, Anthony Richardson is the most intriguing player this year, in my opinion, to watch in the NFL, and I think the Colts are the most intriguing team as well. Anthony Richardson is this young quarterback who hasn't played much football, but he also has an incredible athletic profile and an absolute cannon for an arm. So in week one, you look at his stat line, he completed just 9 passes on 19 attempts with an interception. It was not the most even day, if you will, but he averaged 16.4 air yards per attempt.
Wow.
That was the highest mark by any quarterback in a game over the last two seasons. And he also became the first quarterback to complete 2 passes with 50-plus air yards in a game since 2018. The rest of the NFL, by the way, they had just 1 completion of 50 air yards combined. So Anthony Richardson really showed what he was capable of as a passer in terms of launching the ball down the field. And again, I'm really excited to see what this kid is capable of in his development, if he can stay healthy, and that is a huge if.
I mean, he is a physical freak with an unbelievable arm, but we were told a year ago he needs to sit for a year minimum. He didn't. He got hurt. And he's still raw. But the talent there is, I agree, it's one of the intriguing stories to watch. And definitely the roster they have, it's a good roster. It's a playoff roster if the quarterback can play. All right, heading into tonight, you wrote about Keon Coleman, the rookie receiver from Florida State, who had a decent week one with Josh Allen in Buffalo, replacing essentially Steph Diggs. Not exactly, but is he the guy that Buffalo needed this year, and can he do it as a rookie? Because I think that was a big question mark, their pass catchers.
Right. It's still to be determined, in my opinion. I mean, he was the Bills' leading receiver in week one with 51 yards on four catches, but I think it's a possibility this could be his quote-unquote coming out party, you know, in prime time on a short week against a divisional opponent in the Miami Dolphins who are dealing with some injuries. So I think it still remains to be seen if he can step up and be that, that number one that Josh Allen needs. Because if you watch that game against Arizona, Josh Allen really had to take it upon himself and score four total touchdowns to complete the comeback. But I really do like this Keon kid. I think he's incredibly competitive. I think he works the sideline well. I think he's got good hands as well. So I think that he had a pretty decent showing in week one, and I think he's definitely a player to watch here tonight.
Most intriguing game of week two is?
I would say, it's a little biased. I'm sitting here in Nashville, Tennessee, but I'm kind of interested to see how Aaron Rodgers looks in week two and how Will Levis, by the way, can bounce back in week two as well, because the vibes here in Music City are not great after Will Levis threw the worst interception of all time to lose them the game. But, Bengals and Chiefs, we talked about a little bit. Joe Burrow, can he get back into shape? Another one that I'm just personally intrigued in is the Chicago Bears traveling to the Houston Texans for Sunday Night Football. Because the Bears won their week one game, people are not talking about how Caleb Williams basically did nothing. He looked pretty bad on offense, to be honest. I thought Jaden Daniels had the best rookie performance when we're talking about quarterbacks getting their first start. So is this going to be an instance where the negative Caleb Williams narratives are really born on a primetime stage? Or can he be really competitive against the Texans defense that showed some lapses down the field?
As always, thanks, Jordan. Enjoy the weekend.
You're the man, Kevin. Thanks so much.
Jordan DeJohnny, CBS Sports. And we get a game tonight. So I do have a smell test pick real quickly early for a Thursday night game. It's not Buffalo-Miami. I am looking forward to watching that game. Miami's favored with even some of the injuries and how poor they looked last week. It is at home, short week. Texas State tonight, Denton. Pick 'em. Texas State is playing Arizona State. Arizona State beat Mississippi State last week, blew out Wyoming. It's a one-sided public game, and there is that line at one point, they were getting 2.5. It's down to a pick 'em. Lots of sharp money on Texas State. I don't love the number that we're getting at a pick. I wish I could get it at 1.5, 2.5. But Texas State, an early smell test pick. Russell and Linnell up next, back tomorrow.